Hydrogen has long been described, some say hyped, as the fuel of the future, and green hydrogen, when it's extracted by means of renewable energy, has attracted billions of dollars of investment capital worldwide. Chris Dunphy has been involved in the trucking business for a long time. He was a main freight executive. He ran a mine transportation business in Australia. He's now executive director of Move Logistics, formerly known as TIL Logistics. They have about 1,000 trucks, a big source of greenhouse gas emissions. Chris Dunphy says he believes hydrogen will eventually replace diesel. And he wants to see a lot more coastal shipping too, all up, far less greenhouse gas emissions. He's with me now in Christchurch. Kia ora.
Kia ora, Kim. Good morning.
Good morning. How long would it take to convert your trucks to hydrogen?
That's a good question. I think the... it's a combination of the availability of suitable hydrogen and electric vehicles. We've already got electric trucks running around and hybrid trucks running around.
They're the smaller ones, though, aren't they? The big,
yes, they
the big,
are. Yeah, that,
because the big ones can't be doing with those batteries.
No, that's absolutely right. So hydrogen, as a replacement for diesel in terms of the heavy lifting and the big tasks, is coming, but it's there's only a couple of manufacturers of hydrogen trucks in the world at the moment. We've got the first two coming to New Zealand next year, which we're pretty excited about, and there's only obviously a limited production run, so we're trying to test these things in New Zealand conditions and then obviously try and encourage other manufacturers to enter the fray.
Talk me through it a bit. Where will the hydrogen come from? How will you get it into the truck? Basically, how does it work?
Yeah, so hydrogen as a fuel, from our school certificate science, I mean, hydrogen is the smallest molecule on the periodic table, which in and of itself creates some very interesting challenges as to not only what is it like as a fuel, but also how you capture and retain it. Because as the smallest molecule, it can go through any other medium. So it can go through glass, it can go through steel,
carbon
fiber,
which is not particularly useful when you're trying to contain it, right?
It is. That's exactly right. It's actually more about ensuring that you can actually get the hydrogen near where you want to consume it in a form that it doesn't sort of leak out over a period of time. So, the challenge with hydrogen as a fuel, and you've identified the green aspect of it, your hydrogen has to be converted from something else to become available as a fuel. There's the most common source, of course, is water. With the combination of a hydrogen molecule and an oxygen molecule. So, what's called electrolysis or electrolyzing systems are the most easy way of creating hydrogen, but they're also very expensive and they consume a lot of energy. So, obviously, in a green setting, creating a hydrogen fuel source from hydroelectricity is nirvana. Everything else really starts to cascade off the emissions and cost cliff around how are you getting your electricity?
Did you say electrolysis from hydroelectricity?
Yeah, so
because it doesn't have to be hydro, presumably it's any kind of renewable, isn't it?
Absolutely right. Yes, any sort of renewable will create green hydrogen. It's when you're not using a renewable that you get into other colours of hydrogen, such as blue, grey, brown, which is a zero sum game. So it's sort of right up there with driving your Tesla, but having it powered by imported Indonesian coal. It's a complete misnomer. So what we're looking at is hydrogen that is created from hydroelectricity, as in the electrolysis process comes from hydroelectricity, and you are then using that as your fuel source for the hydrogen engine in these purpose-built trucks.
There are big green hydrogen projects in development in Australia. We're exploring it here. Some of these projects will make ammonia in order to export hydrogen in a transportable means, or hydrogen to make green steel. So it seems as if green hydrogen is coming. Is there any downside?
I completely concur.
Will we have enough renewable energy to make enough hydrogen to make a difference?
Look, I think the short answer is yes, we will. And really, I mean, this country is blessed with hydro electricity resources. They're not necessarily, you know, in the places where the hydrogen is going to be consumed, and they're not necessarily designed to ensure that year-round and peak volumes are going to be consumed. But when you overlay that with wind and solar and other green hydrogen sources, yes, I think the answer is we will have enough.
Somebody is correcting us and pointing out quite rightly that hydrogen is an atom, not a molecule. So there we are, chemistry. Here, Contact and Meridian want to build the world's first large-scale green hydrogen plant in Southland. Mm-hmm. And they say this is going to be for export, it's going to be for heavy transport, which is what you're talking about. It's going to be for aviation, it's going to be for shipping. Are you optimistic that that's going to go ahead?
I'm optimistic that that Manapouri and Tiwai can be very effectively repurposed from currently producing a commodity that the world has in abundance, being aluminium, to renewable power and hydrogen alongside of ammonia, alongside of other solutions, such as thermal batteries, can provide, those solutions for us.
You also want to see more coastal shipping. And this is another topic, but not really, because shipping, of course, produces a lot of greenhouse gas emissions as well. In the context of coastal shipping, do you want the ships to run on hydrogen also?
Certainly, shipping and transport, there's really two issues there, Kim. One is in terms of diesel power, yes, we're talking about emissions, but we're not just talking about emissions in the sense of carbon. We're also talking about particulate matter. So, we're talking about things like sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide. These are nasties. And, in terms of, diesel engines have cleaned themselves up very successfully over a lot of years. We're now up to a standard called Euro 6, which is a measure of how many particulate emissions there are per million. And that's great, but it's still not a great fuel. It's a dirty fuel. It's abundant, of course. And what shipping does, and shipping has also had to, same as road transport, has had to start cleaning its act up with what's called low sulfur heavy fuel, which is more expensive, but it has less sulfur emissions in terms of the environment. Both of these can be converted to alternative green fuels. In the case of shipping and coastal shipping, we've got LPG powered vessels available to us now. We've got hydrogen as an option, but more likely it's going to be something like liquid ammonia, which is a precursor to the hydrogen space as well.
We'll talk more about the coastal shipping in a moment, but lots of people who say they know a lot about hydrogen are texting in. One of them says, you use more energy electrolyzing water in order to get hydrogen than you get from hydrogen fuel. And if you put the freight on trains and then use electric trucks at urban areas for distribution, that would be a better option. Have you thought through that at all?
Look, we've had lots of discussions around alternatives, and in the same way that, my previous employer, Mainfreight, takes a very modal neutral approach to things. That's the approach that we're bringing to MOVE as a business. We
what does
are
that mean?
Certainly not.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that we're not biased or predisposed towards trucks. We really want to move this company away from the stigma of a trucking company and all of the connotations that has.
That's
towards more of a.
That's an extraordinary statement to make, really, isn't it? I mean, there you are running a trucking company. You don't want to run a trucking company anymore.
In a nutshell, that's right. We are pivoting this business towards being modally neutral. We do not have a long-term view that trucking is the be-all to end-all for our clients.
So modally neutral means if you can get the stuff from A to B, you'll do it whichever way is the best way to do it. So it could be on trains, couldn't it?
Kim, if we could do it with a hot air balloon, I'd consider it. You know, there is no need for a lot of what we do to just be on trucks.
Somebody else says that we need, this is a whole nother thing, and it's of course arguable, we need nuclear power to make enough electricity to make enough hydrogen. I feel like we're going round in circles here. When we talk about the electricity needed to make enough hydrogen, have you got that sorted in your mind, or is it still a bit of a movable feast?
I think it's wonderful when you apply, you know, a whole lot of opinions and intelligence to problems, how solutions emerge. And, you only have to look at the what's happened to the cost curve with respect to wind and solar power. You know, when windmills were first installed, you know, for power generation, you know, the cost per kilowatt hour was, you know, as much as eight times what it is today. The cost of manufacturing solar panels has reduced dramatically over the last decade. So whilst I understand the pessimistic view that, you know, this is costly and, you know, that it's potentially wasteful with respect to electricity, this is how you get innovation. This is how you get an ability for people to drive technology to get better cost outcomes.
So on that basic point that it's going to take more electricity to produce hydrogen than hydrogen can give us, what do you say to that?
No, I think that's a point in time. And, you know, again, you know, I'm sure that, you know, there is a lot of technology out there at the moment which is being applied to this issue. You know, if you take, for example, what's occurring with the manufacture of ammonia at the moment, which is a precursor to hydrogen, and it's very clear that the costs of manufacturing ammonia in an industrial setting, and I've had a little bit to do with this in Australia, you know, has halved in the last decade. Now that's a combination of obviously things like you're making ammonia out of natural gas, but you know, these are all points on a cost curve, and the long term trend is that cost is going down.
Crikey, we're still stuck on whether hydrogen is a molecule or an atom here. All right.
Well, when you liquefy it, it's definitely a molecule.
Yes, it is a molecule. Hydrogen can be an atom, but it doesn't exist as an individual physical item. And our previous correspondent was, to quote somebody else, too clever for their own good. All right. What about your coastal shipping? The government is keen on reviving it. It's clear. They've put a bit of money into having a look at it. We used to have 34 coastal ships delivering around the place, and now we've got one. What happened?
Well, what happened was a combination of things. Companies got taken over. Operators left the industry. The big issue that we've had really is that the infrastructure required to be effective with coastal shipping, and coastal shipping, you know, it doesn't just involve containers. It can actually involve vessels that are simply moving what's called break bulk items. So they're just loose items, you know, whether it's pipes or bags of you know, bulk material like cement or, you know, those sorts of things, through to obviously, you know, the ferries with the trucks that, that drive on and drive off them, and the railway wagons that, that get pushed on and off. So we used to have a whole bunch of ports around the country that had ramps that could take a roll-on, roll-off ship. A lot of those ports no longer have that infrastructure available to them. So they've become very homogenous around containers. And, you know, to that end, there is a real requirement in terms of, you know, reactivating coastal shipping to be effective, is to look at what's happening globally with respect to how big ships are getting in terms of container ships and the ports that those are going to call on with respect to New Zealand. And it's going to shrink. I mean, there's going to be fewer ports that these big international vessels call at. And the transport issue is then, how do we get our exports to the ports where those vessels are going to call, and equally, you know, take the imported cargoes off them. So, you know, obviously rail has a role to play in that. Trucking is already playing a huge role in that. And we believe that coastal shipping should be playing a bigger role in that.
I see Norway's working on a green hydrogen ship.
Yes, they are. There's a number of Scandinavian vessel manufacturers who are manufacturing ammonia engines. And of course, you know, let's also realise that New Zealand still has a very large LPG gas resource. We move LPG gas around the country now for clients. So using a product that we already produce to power vessels that cross inter-island is something that we're keen to pursue.
I still get people telling me that hydrogen is not viable for transport due to the requirements related to its density, and I have no idea about this, negative Joule-Thompson effect if in the gas phase, or refrigeration if in liquid phase. It boils at minus 249 degrees centigrade. Its production is inefficient. It's not green unless all electricity is renewable. And electricity is unaffordable, but to produce this in New Zealand under the current market model. Just taking his broad point, this is Paul, taking his broad point, so much needs to change or improve to make hydrogen viable that a lot of people are pessimistic about its future. What do you say?
I say people said exactly the same thing about Elon Musk and electric cars less than a decade ago.
Actually, Elon Musk appears to have produced some kind of heavy vehicle running on electricity rather than hydrogen. Do you know about that?
Yes, I do. There's a number of platforms that are being investigated, and again, you know, whilst we're talking about hydrogen, what we're really talking about is alternatives to diesel, and it's very much a spectrum of who knows which technology is actually going to win the race ultimately. But unless we're actually encouraging and facilitating people to, you know, try these things and develop them, we're going to remain very much, you know, in the ostrich position, you know, talking about how we reduce carbon emissions, you know, in the future, and still heavily reliant on diesel, which I just think is very short-sighted.
When did you become modally neutral?
I think it's been quite a while. I grew up in a very much a road transport setting, I've sort of been around and fascinated by trucks most of my life. But when you're moving big volumes and looking at all of the negative externalities in terms of, you know, these particular emissions and that, you start wondering and thinking there's just got to be a better way.
You were in the mines in Australia that I imagine might concentrate somebody's mind in terms of environment and greenhouse gas emissions.
Yes, you're right. It's when you're a party to the supply chain, which is Australia's quarry. We were exporting nickel concentrate out of Western Australia up into China, and moving coal washing magnetite from Tasmania up to Queensland. So, yes, it's it does give you reason to pause.
Did you have a Road to Damascus experience?
I'm not sure it was so much a road to Damascus as a road back to the Bay of Plenty. I was on a trip back here to see my mum, and was sort of thinking about what the future looked like, and it struck me that, you know, in terms of what we do as an industry, that we're actually party to a big source of world pollution, and that we're standing on the sidelines while the planet is quietly choking, and I don't think that's a good thing.
In order to get your coastal shipping infrastructure up and running, you've suggested that the government could increase road user charges on diesel-powered vehicles, which would provide incentive to change that and also raise money for the infrastructure for the coastal shipping. What do your colleagues in the trucking industry say about that?
Oh, they'd probably want to lynch me. But it's just really about how do we change the narrative around what the relative cost is of doing something that we know is really not good long-term for the planet. A bit like a tax on smoking, Kim. I mean, you know, you can't tell a smoker that they couldn't or shouldn't. It's not illegal. But you can provide disincentives to behaviour. And really the road user comment was more directed to the fact that in order for hydrogen to be given a fighting chance, and electric too, frankly, for the big tasks or bigger tasks, that there is an opportunity for government to have a differentiation in the road user charges settings. So, you know, it could be that obviously road user charges are likely to go up. I think there's a general industry expectation that that's going to occur. But equally, vehicles that are running on more environmentally friendly fuels can get some sort of a differentiation to that.
I feel like I'm watching this space. Are you going to announce something interesting soon?
Yes, I hope to. Yeah, we've got some great initiatives underway. We've been using a small ship, which is already here in New Zealand. It's been trading up and down between the island, inter-islands, for bulk product. We've started loading some of our freight on it.
Where's it going from and to?
Well, currently it trades at various ports. It's what's called a tramper, so it's not dedicated to any particular port. But we've been loading it out of Whanganui down to Littleton and Timaru. But it also calls into Nelson and other ports. So we've started switching some of our lower time sensitive cargoes to that vessel, and it's working out really well.
Excellent to talk to you. Thank you, Chris. Chris Dunphy, who is now Executive Director of Move Logistics, which used to be TIL Logistics.